You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Bike Radar podcast, brought to you by the team behind BikeRadar.com, Cycling Plus and MBUK magazines. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe. And if you can do so, leave us a rating on your podcast provider of choice. It really helps us reach other cyclists like you. Hello, welcome to the Bike Radar podcast. My name's Tom Marvin, Senior Technical Editor here at BikeRadar.com and at MBUK Magazine as well. Joining me in the podcast studio today is Rachel Bennett, who is our in-house resident XC racer extraordinaire. How are you doing, Rachel?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. It was a good intro.
Thanks, yeah, no, I've practiced that one. You've been doing a lot of XC racing. I know you're sort of really into it this year and you're doing a lot of training. Your long-term bike is an Orbea Oise.
Yeah, it's been a shock to the system doing structured training, but yeah, the bike's been amazing and putting hard work in, and hopefully it'll pay off as the national season starts in a couple of weeks.
Cool. Are you planning on doing like a full national series or?
Yeah, I plan to do all the national rounds as long as I can get to them all, because it's expensive traveling around the country getting to them, and then try and fit in the marathon nationals as well at the end of the summer.
Excellent. Nice. Yeah, I do occasionally do a bit. We did an XC race last year, actually, the two of us. We did a pairs race around Menorca in October, November, something like that.
Yeah, November, I think it was.
And I think that's probably written my XC racing career off. Hard work.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, though.
It was fun. It was nice to get a bit of sun late in the year, for sure. This year is obviously it's a big year of XC for you, obviously, but it's also a big year for XC in the world of mountain biking. We have the first round of the XC World Cup coming up it's only a couple of weeks away, I think, April the 12th to the 14th in Brazil.
Yeah, the first two rounds are in Brazil. They were in Brazil not last year, but the last year before.
Okay.
I think the first round.
Ago, yeah,
a couple of years ago. And yeah, the course looked amazing, so hopefully this year it will be as well.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it'll be interesting to see how many of the top racers make I guess if there's two rounds, they might make the effort to travel across there, but I know a few didn't last year got ill going out there and it kind of had a knock-on effect to their season. With the Olympics, obviously, they might hold off on it, but we'll see. Hopefully not.
Do you think the Olympics in Paris in the summer is going to be a bigger focus for some of them than the XC Series, the World Cup?
I think for some of them, yeah. Definitely Pauline Ferrand-Prévot. She's made it very public that that's the one she wants to get.
Okay.
Because that's the one thing missing, I guess, from her trophy cabinet and being a home Olympics for her. I think her main focus will be on that Paris Olympics.
Yeah, I think from the roadie world, there's a few of the roadies heading over towards racing as well. Like, I know Peter Sagan, for example, is really focusing on mountain bike this year. A great opportunity for him to get another bit of potentially gold wear.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a bit of a push for Sagan to win.
Yeah, I think there's some big names that, yeah, it's going to be hard for him to match, I think, in the current form, looking at last year anyway.
Do we know much about the race course in Paris this summer?
Not that I presume they've made a lot of changes from the test event last year, because that wasn't the most positive feedback.
But
a lot of the riders, I think maybe they thought it was a bit sanitized, gravel, a gravel race with a few features. So hopefully they've mixed things up. But yeah, I guess it remains to be seen.
It all seems to be a thing with big, I guess, like obviously World Cup events. It's slightly different from like the big like global sporting events of, you know, the Olympics, the Commonwealth Games. You know, we saw in Glasgow at the World Champs, the XC course was really rad. But then when we had the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham in 2022, and that course was perhaps not the best advertisement for mountain biking.
I think for the Olympics as well, obviously it's a city that hosts it. So it's got to be relatively usually close to that city. Yeah, and accessible, I guess, for the media coverage and the wider sporting community rather than just mountain bikers. But
yeah, I guess there's a bit more pressure to be, for that accessibility. Yeah. And I guess after the games as well, there's maybe a bit more of a legacy thing to be mindful of. Although, has anyone ever ridden at Hadley Farm? I'm not sure.
Who knows? Yeah, it's a shame because obviously XC is an amazing sport, especially now as the courses are getting more technical and more impressive to see. It'd be awesome to show that to the wider community, not just mountain bikers.
Mm.
It would be cool for an amazing course to really highlight how good XC racing can be.
Yeah, and mountain biking in general, I guess.
Yeah,
I think it's the thing with, you know, with the Olympics and the Commonwealth. Like I don't follow curling, for example.
No,
particularly
surprises. Hard.
Yeah, no. Likewise, taekwondo. I don't know, but when the Olympics is on, I watch it because it's there. So I imagine, you know, this is a great opportunity to get a lot of eyes on the sport of mountain biking, which we'll see.
Definitely. Well, hopefully they put on a good show.
Fingers crossed. I'm certainly looking forward to Brazil anyway in a couple of weeks too. This season so far, we've just seen the end of the Cape Epic, which is like, we'll talk about what the Cape Epic is maybe in a sec, but that's just finished. We've also had a few Swiss Cups and there's been a few sort of European races. Do you want to quickly run through what's been going on in terms of results and who's doing well, who to look out for?
Yeah, so the Swiss Cup, so there's been a couple of rounds and a few races in Spain as well, which a lot of the, I guess, names to watch have been getting some early season racing in.
Mm-hmm.
And Pauline Ferran-Prevot is unbeaten currently in all. She's done four races and topped out in all of them. So, yeah, she's looking strong, which is ideal for this year, I guess, for her.
Yeah.
And Yolanda Neff has also picked up a couple of silvers behind Pauline, or on podiums anyway.
Yeah.
So it'd be cool to see Yolanda back on top.
Yeah, she had a tough season last year.
Yeah, she finished strongly. I think she was on the podium the last round. But yeah, she's one of my favourites, so it'd be cool to see her back, back in the sharp end of racing. And in terms of the men, yeah, it's the French again that seemed to be dominating, with John Saroux, Joshua Dubois from Rock Rider, and Koretsky as well.
Mm-hmm.
He's picked up a win. So
a lot of French flags flying on those podiums
early
season. It's looking like, I think the strong money in Paris would be on a French winner, perhaps.
Yeah, definitely. But then Puck Pitesse, I'm not sure how to pronounce the second name, but I'm not sure she's raced any XC yet this season, but she's been getting podiums on the road and a bronze in the Cyclocross World Champs. So, yeah. And from her last season, you wouldn't write her off to, win World Cup rounds, the Olympics, World Champs, everything probably.
Yeah. No, it would be a really interesting one, I think. Obviously, this podcast, we've sort of jumped straight into the world of XC, and that's because this podcast is going to be all about cross-country. We've sort of given a brief idea of why we're excited. Well, obviously the Olympics, the new rounds in Brazil this year, and some like really hot competition. But we are in a minute going to talk about some of the new bikes and tech that's been released ready for, I guess you could argue, ready for the Olympics. But, you know, bikes are on a sort of a continual cycle of improvement anyway. But should we quickly talk about the Cape Epic? It's slightly different from your classic XCO or XC Olympic racing.
Yeah. I mean, as the name would suggest, it's an epic race.
Uh-huh.
It's in South Africa and it's six stages of about 100 kilometres a day.
Mm-hmm.
And some days are about 3,000 metres climbing. Although I think that big day, because of the heat, they've had excessive heat, even for South Africa at this time. So that was reduced slightly, but still, epic days on the bike.
Mm.
And you get big names going out there, like Nino Schurter is out there, Mona Mittenwaller, and the Ghost Factory team, Anne Terpstra.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they're all out there. And yeah, it's just finished. So Nino is looking strong, coming in second, behind a team from Specialized, I think.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, also on the women's side, Mona coming in second.
Mm-hmm.
And Anne Terpstra, so two big XCO names doing well out in pre-season in South Africa. So, their legs will be looking good.
I guess that's interesting because XCO is, you know, obviously like a 90-minute to maybe an hour and three quarters of hard effort, whereas you're not going to be completing 100-odd K with 3,000 metres of climbing, that kind of time. So it's a different sport in some respects, a different sort of way of racing. Maybe you'd argue it would suit a different kind of person. But obviously, like, these hitters from the XCO world are doing well in the marathons as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a good time of year for them to do such a race.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way to train for racing, in my opinion, is to race, whether it's a marathon race, a stage race. It all helps, I guess, get in the zone for racing,
mm-hmm.
Get your race head on. And although it is a different style of race from a 90-minute XCO, it's not going to harm them, really, I would say. And a lot of these races, like you say, do the marathon. So that's another world champs that a lot of them do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's probably something a little bit different for them as well to keep racing interesting.
Yeah.
Rather than just going full on to XCO and XCC for the whole year.
I guess Nino's like quite well associated with Cape Epic. He's certainly done quite a few of them from what I understand. So, yeah. A regular face, and probably a regular face up at the sharp end of it as well, no doubt.
Yeah, definitely.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Okay, so those are some of the reasons why we're sort of pretty excited about cross country coming into 2024. But of course, with every year that comes by, we see new bikes being launched. We see it across the spectrum of mountain biking. But of course, when it's an Olympic year, we tend to see a slight bias towards some more XC bikes being launched early in the year or perhaps in the year before. And that's been no different in 2023-24. You know, last year we saw bikes from Trek, so they updated the Super Calibre to 80mm of rear suspension. And of course, we saw the Specialized Epic World Cup with 75mm of travel. So those two bikes sort of sit in their own little weird bracket of sort of short travel XC bikes. And we also saw updates to the Mondraker F Podium, Pinarello and Cervelo, two sort of very road-focused brands, both bought out new full suspension XC bikes, the Dogma XC, there was a hardtail version of that as well, and the ZFS5. There's plenty of news of those over on bikeradar.com. Just head to Google and type the bike name and bike radar, and you'll almost certainly find a news story. But in the past sort of few weeks, we have seen the release of a number of notable new XC bikes from some pretty punchy brands. Do you want to quickly run through what we've seen recently?
Yes, so the Specialized brought out the Epic 8 beginning of this year or end of last year?
Launched in March.
Yeah, and you went over to the launch, didn't you, in South America, was it?
Yeah, went down to Chile to the actual product launch in December, and then, a nice long embargo time on that, which is handy.
Yeah, and Yeti have just bought out their ASR, jumping back into the XC game after, I think, about a decade out of it, with a modern sort of XC bike with 120mm travel up front, 115 at the back, flex day suspension design.
Yeah.
And then the Cannondale Scalpel as well has come out.
And then there's another one, Lee Coogan, which is a brand that I guess isn't particularly well known over here in the UK, perhaps better known over in the US, and is actually the mountain bike brand sort of linked to Basso Bikes, who are a relatively well-known Italian road bike manufacturer. And they've got a few bikes in their range, including the new Crossfire 428, which sits alongside trail bike version of on a similar-ish platform, and a rather interesting 30mm travel bike that we'll touch on later on. But yeah, should we sort of talk through some of these new bikes?
Yeah. Well, I got a chance to ride the Yeti ASR a few weeks back. It's sort of modern, aimed to tackle this tech that you're finding on XC courses. So like the likes of the Obeois and and the Mondraker F Podium, it's gone for 120mm travel up front and a slacker head angle. So it is, 66.5, which is pretty slack for an XC bike, whereas the Obeya is 67, so it's even slacker than that. And it felt it when I rode it. It felt incredibly secure and comfortable going fast downhill.
Yeah.
It really seemed to want to do that. It's a bit shorter as well. So, the handling on technical terrain, it felt really, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess they market it as their lightest full suspension bike they've ever built, with it's just under 1,500 grams for the frame with no shock.
Okay.
And that is their top spec one, which is their wireless frame. So they've actually designed a frame that only has one cable port for the rear brake.
Huh.
No headset cable routing.
Yeah.
So that you can use the likes, wireless suspension, wireless gearing on that. And it also doesn't have any headset cable routing for the lower spec models either, which might be, for those riding it not on a race team and with their own personal mechanic, is definitely a big win.
Goes in through the head tube, is that right?
Yeah.
Like a standard.
So like a standard, how bikes used to be.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it did create quite the mess of cables, I guess, at the front, but you get that anyway with headset cable routing. It just makes it a lot easier to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was... All I can say, it was a fun bike, and I think you're going to review it in more depth later on in the year. So,
yeah, we're doing I've got a cross-country bike test coming up relatively soon. Nice. So, yeah, I'll be getting hold of one of those, which I'm excited about. It looks great as well, like classic Yeti, sort of very polished aesthetic.
Yeah,
like,
it's a good-looking bike, for sure.
Yeah, they've done a good job on that.
Yeah.
Okay, so as you sort of mentioned, Specialized did launch the Epic 8. That came out. It was only a few weeks ago that it was sort of officially launched. There's been a few hints dropped over the past sort of few months. And yeah, the actual product launch was back in December. So again, it feels like, you know, we'll talk about the Scalpel in a second as well. They're all kind of going 120 mil. You know, Mondraker's bike are basically 120 mil. Okay, 115, 120 across the sort of ranges of them. You know, Cervelo's ZFS5 is 100 or 120 mil. You know, this seems to be sort of what's becoming a bit of a sweet spot for XC race bikes, certainly this year. Again, I guess the point is it's kind of reflecting sort of the more technical tracks and courses that are out there. You know, again, we talked about the World Champs course up in Glasgow. You know, you look at Novi Mesto, pretty gnarly down there. So it kind of starting to make sense. And yeah, the Epic 8 is very much similar thing. 120 mil at the back, 120 mil fork. And like you on the whole headset routing, the S-Works version has a headset-routed rear brake hose, but everything else, the suspension via the new flight attendant and the gears are obviously wireless. And then if you go for the models down, the Pro Expert and Comp, they have head tube-routed cabling. Because again, it's that sort of privateer, a little bit easier to work on. You know, if you're in the pits yourself and, you know, out the back of your car or your van and you don't, you know, you need to change a cable or whatever it is.
It definitely makes sense. Having to work on a bike myself with headset cable routing, it definitely makes sense now that you've got all this wireless gear. The top spec ones don't even need them, so yeah, save some weight, I guess.
Yeah, it's always just going to be that rear brake at the moment.
Yeah, just
unless
the rear
someone
brake.
Bring, I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Who knows what the future holds?
And then looking again, you know, Cannondale Scalpel, it doesn't take a genius to guess that, yeah, 120 mil front and back, flex stay suspension. So this is, you know, if you're sort of relatively new to XC Tech and you keep coming across this flex stay suspension, what really is that? Traditionally, in a rear suspension system, you know, there'll be pivots somewhere along the way, unless it's a true single pivot. And a flex stay is basically using inherent flex in the carbon or aluminium tubes to replace the rearward pivot that either sits on the chainstay or the seat stay near the rear axle. These pivots, they only sort of tend to pivot around between 5 and 7 degrees normally, and that sort of amount of flex can be engineered into a frame tube, reducing the need to put, you know, a pivot in there. That saves weight, it helps with stiffness, it reduces maintenance, and ultimately it's probably a little bit cheaper to make as well, potentially. So it seems that like a lot of the XC bikes out there in recent times follow this very similar silhouette of a shock mounted just below the top tube, maybe vertically by the seat tube. And then, yeah, this sort of single pivot linkage actuated flex stay suspension arrangement. There's not actually that many out there with like a dual link system. I guess Mondraker are still using the two triangles with zero suspension linkage. Pivot still using a DW link. There's not many more out there really, I don't think.
No, most I've come across seem to be going the flex stay.
Is the Orbea's like that as well?
Yeah, Orbea's like that as well.
Yeah. The sort of little outlier to those sort of three bikes that we've just talked about there, but, you know, a fourth one on top of that is that Lee Coogan. The Crossfire 428 is actually a bit more of a traditional 100mm XC race bike with a flex stay rear suspension system. However, the one that's actually really interesting, it was launched in 2022. It's called the Rampage Innova. And it kind of looks like a hardtail with a dropped seat stay and then like a slightly weird attachment to the to the seat tube, which is a leaf sprung 30mm. I think there's like a couple of little pistons in there to sort of help keep everything on track and from twisting and flexing all over the place. But certainly harks back to the days of the soft tail, which was a bit of a thing like 15, 20 years ago. Quite often saw little bikes like weird, like tiny little shocks at the top of the...
Before my bike time.
Before your bike time. Feels a bit more like gravel tech, but not a bike that we've ridden, but certainly a bike that if Lee Coogan fired over to our Bristol HQ, I'm sure there'd be quite a few of us sort of having a jump on that and having a go.
Yeah, interesting to see how it would feel.
Yeah, for sure. In terms of XC race tech, now there are a couple of things that are coming out shortly that we can't talk about because we'd be breaking embargoes. but I guess the biggest news in 2024 thus far has been the launch of RockShox's new flight attendant. Have you had a chance to have a little scooch over that, have a look at it all?
Not in person. I've watched the videos over on Bike Radar, which you should go check out if you haven't already.
Great plug.
But no, I haven't had a play around. But you've ridden it a fair bit?
Not enough. I have ridden it a bit. I'd like to ride it more, but we are deep into the world of trail bike of the year testing at the moment. So sadly, my time on XC bikes has been a little bit limited. But in the run-up to the launch of the Epic 8, I spent a bit of time on Flight Attendant, which was co-launched with the Epic 8.
And is it tech that you think is spot on, working?
You know what? Work? I don't think... I mean, I've spoken to a few people who don't love it. I haven't spoken to anyone who thinks it doesn't work. Like, it definitely works. It definitely does what it's designed to do. Yeah, some people just don't seem super, like, enthused by it. I actually thought it was pretty good.
Does it take a lot of time to set up then for you?
So there is a bit of setup to be done with it. Like, you can play around with the app and get it all sort of set up as how you want it. And then it's good to sort of spend a few rides riding it before it sort of will key into how you ride. And then it sort of from that works out how best to work. It's basically an automatic lockout for RockShox suspension, the SID and the SID Lux. They've had it on long travel forks and shocks for a little while now, but they've sort of squeezed it into a SID and a SID Lux. But it basically toggles between open, pedal and lock modes, depending on the amount of effort you're putting in, how rough the ground is, whether you're going uphill. And like, yeah, if you're going off like a drop or something, it'll open itself up. It is very smart. Like, it's weirdly smart. Like, it... I was saying to someone the other day, like, when it's relatively smooth, it'll always bias towards open unless it feels like you want to be in a more locked mode. But I had it, there's a point where I had it in like the pedal mode, and then I sort of stopped and picked the bike up, and I sort of like jumped, I think I jumped down like a big step or something, you know, like a knee-high sort of step. And as I jumped down, it sort of buzzed itself open because it knew I was free-falling.
Yeah, that's quite cool.
I mean, literally, like, you can ride it, you know, on tarmac along a road, like, so where it may well be in its pedal or its locked mode, and then hit a curb, and you basically wouldn't realize that your suspension was closed.
Yeah.
Up until that point, it's so quick. It is impressive stuff. So yeah, no, I like it. Like, I kind of like not having to do anything. You've got Squid Lock on your pair. Do you use it much?
Yeah, I do use it quite a lot, to be fair. I mean, obviously, it depends on where I'm riding and terrain. But yeah, doing some of the longer stage races where you do have sections that are on either tarmac or forest roads or sort of, yeah, gravel roads. Yeah, I lock it out quite a lot. And it's a noticeable difference. But then, yeah, I have to do it. It's something else to think about, something else to toggle, take your hands off. Well, not off, but yeah, move your hands about on the bars.
And that's it. I think you have to think about it. And I think that's, you know, I was always a fan of the specialized brain because you didn't have to think about your lockout. You know, it had its sort of its downsides. Like, it felt a bit knocky. It didn't always do exactly what you wanted it to. You couldn't adjust it on the fly and all that sort of stuff. But actually, like, for the most part, you set it for the course and you leave it and it just locked it out when it needed to be locked out. And when it didn't, it was open. And it's quite nice in that respect. And the flight attendant's basically that, but even more smooth, even more thoughtless, and basically more effective.
Yeah, I guess when you're racing, that can be the difference between winning or losing, I guess. If you're taking extra time to think about when you need to lock out, or if you don't lock out for a certain feature or whatever, or it can definitely...
It adds to the time.
Add to your time,
I think, so. I mean, SRAM are very good at marketing. And you know, they have their claims of how much I think they're I can't remember the exact number, like 1.9% faster or whatever it might be. And that, you know, like, take that maybe with a pinch of salt, but like, the reality is, when you're like going full gas around an XC course and you're thinking about, you know, your shock mode and your fork mode and your gears and all that sort of stuff, and you know, like, and especially with, say, like a non-transmission drivetrain as well, like, can I shift here, am I putting too much power through, you know, the combination of transmission and flight attendant, you just don't really think about these things quite as much.
Especially in the later laps of a race when fatigue is setting in. Yeah, your mind's not thinking as clear or as quick. I know I definitely make more mistakes in those later when I'm pushing for that last lap. So yeah, I think it could make a big difference in those sort of later stages of the race.
I think, was it Lenzerheide last year? I think SRAM said that it changed settings on Nino's bike like 1,300 times or something in the course of a race.
It's mad.
Which is, I think we worked out as like every 4 seconds or something along those lines. Like, and as much as you sort of might say, oh, you know, I've got this thing on my bar, I can do it whenever I want, like, you're not doing it every 4 seconds for an hour and a half.
The human brain's not working that fast or changing stuff. No.
I think the one place where it sort of maybe doesn't work out, I found, was like when you're coming down like a rattly descent and straight into like a smooth climb or like a punchy climb where it would bias towards being locked out from being open. Like, it does sort of there was a little bit of a lag of it changing into that, you know, sort of stiffer pedaling mode, either because it sort of felt that it wanted to make sure it was in the right mode, or it didn't want to instantly lock it out, sort of thing. And then, so, you know, you do the odd sort of pedal stroke where the bike is bobbing a little bit more than you'd want, because I guess you can build a bike that is built for flight attendant, so built to be locked out when it needs to be, which gives you a more supple open mode potentially. Mm. And I guess with your squid lock, if you're coming down a track like that and you know there's a climb coming, you can just wang it straight into climb mode at exactly the right moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's done and I'm off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A bit more proactive rather than reactive. So that's the XC Tech for this year. But let's very quickly loop back to racing this year. Rachel, who is A, your top pick for the Olympics in the men's and the women's? And what are you looking forward to personally for XC Racing, like yourself this year? Because I know you're going to be doing quite a lot.
For the Olympics, I mean, I'm a big fan of Pauline. I know she's not a Brit, but I would love to see her win that gold. And yeah, just complete the collection of gold medals and rainbow striped tops that she's got.
Yep.
So that would be cool. For the men, I mean, if I love Nino, it'd be cool for him to win.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would go Nino. I mean, they're quite boring and standard. They're not the new kids on the block there. But yeah, Nino and Pauline would be my favoured. And I think they both have it in them to get the gold.
Great. Okay.
Sorry, Brits. And for me personally, weirdly, I'm looking forward to the marathon nationals the most. Having done a few stage races with yourself and Lanzarote earlier this year. Yeah, I'm enjoying those longer distance. I hated my first marathon I did last year, but yeah, I've turned full 360.
Turn the page on that.
And yeah, I enjoyed them. As long as it's not laps in the south of England on a very, not very hilly route, but it's in Kilda Forest this year. So yeah, looking forward to that.
Okay. And you can obviously, you'll be writing about it, mbuk.com blog about your XC racing.
Yeah, I've got a race diary on mbuk.com. So running through the lessons I've learned. Mm-hmm. The struggles I'm having and, yeah, the triumphs I'm having too, which, yeah, I've had a pretty good season so far. So hopefully it will continue.
Cool. And obviously your long-term updates are going to be going on bikerudder.com with your Orbea.
Yeah, so the first one's just gone up now and I will be updating them. I think it's, yeah, every couple of months with how I'm getting on with the bike, the setup, any changes I've made and, yeah, also my racing because, yeah, it's a race bike and I'm having a lot of fun on it so far. It's very capable and it's making me feel more capable than I probably am. But yeah,
excellent. Massage that ego.
Yeah,
that's great.
It's a good bike. Yeah, what about you, Tom? Who do you think's going to take the Olympic golds?
I think I'm going to probably agree with you on Pauline. A great early start to the season. Mm-hmm. You know, home Olympics. It would be cool to see a French person getting a gold medal there. Puck, I think she's got a good shout in there as well. Obviously, the Brit in me would love to see Evie do well.
Yeah, I would love to see. I wouldn't be sad if Evie won.
No, of course not. On the men's, I'm going to put, I think he will be, but I'm putting money on Pidcock. If he's racing the Olympics, and he's probably announced it, I just probably have missed it, but if he's racing, I'm putting money on him with Vanderpoel, a close second, and Sagan somewhere down
going
in the mid-pack.
Going for the roadies, eh?
but yeah, Nino's a shout on that.
Koretsky, another French on
maybe
top.
Maybe Schwarzbauer, if he's having a strong one.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll see.
It's going to be exciting, whatever.
Certainly is. And from my XC Racing personal point of view, probably absolutely none.
Unless I drag you to another stage race.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, if there's a trip abroad somewhere nice and sunny. But I am genuinely looking forward to my next bike test after Bike of the Year, which is cross-country race bikes. So at the moment, and I'm not going to guarantee it because obviously we need the bikes to actually arrive, but we're looking at getting the Scalpel, an Epic, an F Podium, and an ASR in for a four-way XC bike test, which should be really cool. All of them are going to be second-tier models, I believe. So kind of more your sort of privateer race bike rather than like the top spanky World Cup race bikes, which are like silly expensive. These are just very expensive.
Yeah. Cool.
So yeah, we'll bring full reviews of those. Well, thanks ever so much for listening to the podcast. Don't forget to rate the podcast and drop us a little comment or a review. Our email address is always open to ideas and comments and feedback. It's podcast@bikerodo.com. And don't forget, you can also send us questions for our tech Q&As. But yeah, thanks ever so much, Rach, for your time and your input.
No worries.
We'll be back with another podcast very soon. Thanks for listening to the Bike Radar podcast. If you've not done so already, please subscribe and share with your friends, or leave us a rating if you've enjoyed this episode.